Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Are You the One wrap-up podcast for episode 3 of season 2. My name is Brian Cohen. I'm here with my co-host, Allie Lesher. Allie, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing great. And Brian, how's your heart been?
You know, not as good as Nate's been. He's had better days. He's had better days.
Oh, my God, this episode. One thing I want to say before we get started. I know you know I always have notes on notes on notes. My notes have notes. But I left one sheet of notes, my most important notes, at work because despite what Leighton thinks, I do have a real job in a real life. But have no fear. I think I'll be able to pull through.
Yeah, I mean, that goes for me, too. You know, I would love for making fun of knuckleheads on TV to be, like, the top line of my resume. But right now, it's not even a footnote on there because I actually have a real job where I make a salary and I don't get a chance to make fun of knuckleheads. So I'm very grateful to do this with you on a weekly basis. And, you know, it's just a pleasure.
I wouldn't go that far. No. this is great. I just mostly wanted to take a jab at Leighton for taking a jab at me, but more on that later.
Yeah, now let's take jabs at the entire cast.
Perfect. I'm not going to pull any punches.
So it starts off with the same weekly tradition of Brie throwing her hands up in the air saying, I have no idea what's going on at this matchup ceremony, which I basically think everyone agrees with.
I'm literally right there with her. I have no idea what's happening, and we're going to try to make sense of it.
Yeah, so Brandon starts it off by telling Curtis and Brie and Brett and Paris that, you know, chances are they may not be a match because they've been two in each week, and even if they mixed it up, which is basically the pot calling the kettle black if I've ever seen it.
Yeah, I wanted to know, what do you think of this logic he has going here? Because basically, I think he's just a bitter Betty, but I'm going to let you let me know what you think. Because Curtis and Brown and Paris and Pratt, like, sure, maybe they're not matches, but they haven't been to the truth booth. They haven't been unconfirmed. So let them get to know each other. Brandon comes and rains on their parade and says, you guys are most likely not a match because other people, we've been mixing it up. So you should start mixing it up with other people. What do you think of the logic behind that? Is there any?
So there is some logic. If I'm putting myself in Brandon's head, I think what he's thinking is, you know, through these two matchup ceremonies, we've had two constants, which are the main two matches, and then we mix it up for the other eight, I believe. I don't think anyone's been the same match each of the first 2 weeks. So just by the sheer chance of it, of someone else being a match those weeks, then that eliminates one of the main two matches of being a perfect match. Where, I mean, we've had Leighton and Jenny the first week. I think we had Dario and Shelby this week. And there have been a couple others that maybe there could be perfect matches in there. So if just one of those is a match, and then that completely eliminates Pratt and Paris or Brie and Curtis from being a match. So he's basically saying just try to see who else there is, as a backup.
I think that's fine and fair and maybe true, but I just don't think it's his place right now to say that. I think he's kind of jealous that they're still not sure if they're a match and they still get to have a strong connection without the house like being annoyed by it. But one thing I think is really interesting, and this kind of sets up basically the theme of the episode, which is Brandon and Christina coping after the no match. And I mean, there are other, obviously, things that happen, but I think a common thread through the whole episode is them trying to show that Brandon is not doing so well moving on. And Christina, who at this point in the episode says that Brandon, while not trying to hold her back, is holding her back from experiencing the rest of the guys in the house.
Yeah, Christina's at least being open to the idea of maybe having a match with John. But, you know, Brandon is, no, I'm sticking with Christina. And the only person I even remotely have a connection with is Alexandria. But obviously that's not even reciprocated. So it's he's in a tough spot. And we see why Pratt and Paris decided to try to avoid the truth booth the first week. Because if they were in a match, then we would be saying the same thing, but we were changing the names to Brad and Paris instead of Brandon and Christina.
One thing that confuses me about this part is like, and the whole troop boot thing, every ceremony we hear this, and you know, we've gotten some questions about this. Everyone's like in such a rush and with such high expectations to get matches to the point where I like had to go back to season one stats and be like, how many matches were they at this point in the season? Because I feel as a viewer, like there's so much pressure to the point where Brandon is trying to pull apart people that may be their best chance at being matches. rather than focusing on all the other moving parts going on right now. So I looked back and I think they got 2 beams the first one, 4 beams the second week, and then back to 2 beams for a while before they got a confirmed match later on. So why is everyone in such a rush right now?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it took the first season cast until I think it was episode 5 or 6, and it took a double Truth Booth episode to do it, and it took the second of the 2 Truth Booths to get them right. And I believe even in that episode, they were allowed to pick any match, although that may have been later on. But even still, it took them till that episode to finally get on track. And that's when they started to make some progress, because once you get a match or two, it just eliminates so many variables that you can then go back to the first few episodes and just kind of, you know, pick out, all right, so if this person's a match, then this one isn't, then this one isn't, then this one isn't. And it really helps you just narrow the scope of the game. And then all of a sudden you're picking between 3 or 4 people instead of 8 or 9 people. And it makes it so much easier. Like, you're not going to win this in 3 weeks. You're going to win this. If you're going to win this, it's going to be 9 or 10 weeks. So got a while to go. Just keep chugging along.
That's what frustrates me, though, is that they're not making the most strategic moves they can early on when the feeling shouldn't be that strong. You know, who am I to judge? But Ellie can judge, and she lays the truth bomb that you can't be in love in a week. You need to know how their person's fart smell to be in love, which, you know, half truth bomb, half disgusting, but okay, Ellie, as usual.
And it kind of just reconfirms my feelings about from last week about whatever the quote was. I don't remember. But the fact that I immediately jumped to Ellie when it came to the fart smelling joke, and she was like half right. You know, maybe Ashley was the one that said it, but Ellie said it right after her. So,
well, Ellie would want to smell Ashley's farts to be in love with her, but I don't think she said anything about her own farts.
All right. Fair enough.
I forgot where I was going with that. There was something there, but I got distracted with Ellie and her farting.
We'll edit in a joke later on. Don't worry.
Oh, no. All I'm saying is that they're not making the most strategic moves here, and then they're getting frustrated that they're not materializing in more beams. I mean, yeah. We'll get into their strategy later, because Jasmine had something to say on that to us and on the show, which both I thought were hilarious.
I completely agree. And we'll get to the challenge in a second, but it all goes, I mean, a lot of the strategic decisions you can make are based on who you pair with and who eventually wins the challenge, but we'll get to that. But this week, I mean, they screwed up the challenge unbelievably massively, but, you know, we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. Because first, there was Jenny and Anthony restarting their little romance that it just feels like just wrong watching it. Like, you just kind of like kind of jump into the screen and just be like, Jenny, go away. But she just keeps going back. It's not going to end well.
I can't watch them. Like, I think I tweeted last night something about, like, I can't watch them making out, and I watched all of Dating Naked, which I actually incorrectly said naked dating, because I was just so distraught from watching the two of them flirt. And 2 contestants from Dating Naked favorited those with no hashtag or reference to their show at all. And I actually reversed the words of their show. So good on them for finding that. That's a new level.
There's... still looking for their fame, and they're just enjoying your backdoor references of going back to the Dating Naked. Now I don't even know, is it Dating Naked?
It's Dating Naked. I would watch every single episode strapped to a chair with my eyes open without the blurs of them like on ATVs and like flopping around in mud before I'd want to watch another second of Anthony and Jenny flirting. That said, I wouldn't be surprised if they're a match.
I don't see it. Honestly, I don't know who Anthony's match is going to be. I feel like if there was like an 11th guy messing around, just like do it, I think it would make you be my leading contender. Because I don't know who his match is going to be, unless it ends up being like Tyler or something like that. I have no idea.
Well, I honestly just think that in some ways, like, casting Anthony is mean, because like Anthony's not looking for a relationship, but let him prove us wrong. I still think him and Ellie could be a match, but I don't know. I thought in the way they showed this on TV with the editing is like, Jenny was last episode only with him to make Leighton angry, and now she's choosing him over Leighton a lot.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, the whole situation is just the way they started out flirting, and now the way they're flirting now, it just feels weird. I don't know. It's hard to describe.
No, I feel it. I feel you. I feel it in like kind of way. But what I'm saying is like with their relationship and with a couple other relationships we see this episode, my concern, and I'm skeptical that we're not seeing the whole story here. And I know we can't, we only have an hour, you know, plus 30 minutes of bullshit afterwards on the after show or the after match or whatever they want to call it, to tell the story. And certain things are going to get cut out of that, obviously. But what's confusing to me, and it's just the way it started, like when the 11th girl walks in and everyone's upset and there's not enough story before that to make me feel why they're upset. Mm-hmm. Same thing with these, like all of a sudden I'm shocked that certain people aren't in matches or I'm supposed to be invested in a couple that's together when I haven't seen any lead up to this at all that makes any sense.
Yeah, unless just the fact is they're just so wildly off with all these matches that they're trying to edit this to make it seem like they're getting a couple here and there. But maybe both Pratt and Paris and Bree and Curtis are wrong and they have just absolutely no idea and it's going to crash and burn. I'm not ruling that out as a possibility.
No, it's definitely possible. But I do think the odds are that at least two couples would have, even on the people we haven't seen, which more on that from Plainview Sue in a minute. But like even the couples we haven't seen, there must be four people in the house that have at least flirted or talked to or formed a relationship with their perfect match that they can take out of context and show to us on the screen.
Yeah, so you led to Plainview Sue's question, and it actually came on Facebook this time. And she asked, one of my problems with the show is they seem to focus on the same contestants over and over. I understand producers want to show the more interesting contestants, but I'd like to get to know some of the others. Now, it seems like the main people that I think of that just really have no storyline are Garland, really has no storyline. Tyler really has no storyline other than the fact she just is left out of everything, which I guess in and of itself is a storyline, but it's not really much. And like, you know, Ellie is just throwing out jokes, but she doesn't really have a storyline right now either. So there's a few people that just have really no, like we have no way to know who possibly their perfect matches.
My theory behind that is just that there are certain strong either personalities or couples or volatile couples that are going to come from this in the future that we're focusing on them. They're spending, albeit too much time focusing on them. And that we're sort of seeing, we're getting to know the other people as these relationships or the drama unfolds. So like we start seeing Alex now because Brandon is available to talk to her, you know? So we're seeing the other contestants or the other characters, people, whatever on the show as the main people start spitting out. I agree. I think I'd like to see them more before, you know, week five, but I do think that maybe there's, a method to the madness. Also, I can't get Stacey's mom out of my head since we were talking about playing DC and I was going to play it, but I don't exactly know how it starts and I don't either want dead air or like massive curse words. So I'll have that queued up for next week.
PG podcast. So then we jump to part one of the Need Apocalypse with one of the most just gut-wrenchingly awkward conversations I've ever seen on MTV. Podcast of MTV show. And in fact, I had to write down all of his lines from this and they get progressively worse.
Okay, so are we gonna do the podcast players? Are you gonna perform for us?
I'm not gonna do the Nate impression because I don't feel like channeling his feelings at that emotion at that point in time because I don't feel like
you can't
bawling.
Tap into that. Come on, tap into it.
I really don't think I can. I don't think many humans can. I think he was on his own special planet there. But just like going through some of these, like he starts it off with a girl he met a week ago. I would move to Kansas just for you. But I'm not going to smother you. I'm not sure how those two can tie together. Then he goes, I know how you are and I can adjust to who you are. Every girl I've been with, I've adjusted to. If there was ever like a blinking light about why you suck at relationships, you just spelled it out on national TV, so kudos to you. And then I think the creme de la creme. I've literally been with the hottest girls around since I was 13. Sorry, not sorry.
Snaps for Nate.
I mean,
can you hear those snaps, Nate? Snapping it up for you. Good job. Get those hot seventh graders.
Yeah, I mean, when you step up your game when you're at dodgeball practice. Like, geez, I don't even know where to go from there. Like, I'm surprised Shelly lasted that long in that conversation.
Well, he's acting maybe 12 and a half. So I think it's easy to say since you were 13 when you're not yet 13. So it's maybe it's more aspirational, but go ahead.
No, I was just saying, even more on top of that, this is, again, my own little weird sidebar, but is wearing winter wool hats in like a tropical setting like a style choice now?
Okay. I literally thought to myself and was going to tweet this, but I was behind a little bit and I didn't think anyone else would notice this. But I think mustard colored, saggy, like Seven Dwarfs hat that he was wearing that then Tyler was later wearing in like a interview is probably the reason that Shelby didn't pick him and picked Dario, because that's a sign.
But even Shelby was wearing, I mean, it was like a nice looking wool hat. It was like a clean white wool hat that, you know, if you're walking down the streets of New York in December, it would be perfectly fine. But you're in like Puerto Rico where it's probably like 85 degrees. How are you remotely comfortable wearing like a wool hat on your head?
I mean, I'm going to be real. If I was on TV full time, I'm not trying to always brush my hair. Maybe that was like a stylish cover for a third day hair wash that went unwashed.
I'll take that because that's the only explanation I could possibly think of.
Sorry to get real.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry. One thing that I do want to say is that I don't think any of this is Shelby's fault. I do think Shelby is doing the most human sort of boundary setting she can do without just straight up saying, I mean, I kind of accused her of leading him on last week, and maybe that's the picture that was painted for me in my head. But this week, I think we do see her approach Nate that starts this whole thing. Nate was going to go off either way. I'm not saying she shouldn't have approached him, but she says like she feels bad about kissing Dario in front of him. And I think what he's hearing is, I didn't want to kiss Dario. Yeah. But what's being said is, I wish you weren't there to see it.
Basically, that's basically what she said.
I think that's what's happening is like Shelby's trying to be like a nice, caring human. She cares about him. I mean, they were friends at least. He considers her an ex-girlfriend, but he's taking every little bit she's saying that's positive and being like, oh my god, she feels the same way, I know it, I just have to wait. And that's what's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, not to pull from Jersey Shore here, but he's a stage five clinger. That's basically what he is. I mean, Shelby did all that she could do without like knocking him out and dragging him away and saying, leave me alone. Like, she handled it as well as she possibly could, so kudos to Shelby, because I don't think a lot of other people would have been as kind.
One, never apologize for referencing Jersey Shore. And two, the truth continues to come out about additional MTV shows that you watch and you're not watching.
I mean, everyone on the planet watched Jersey Shore. I'm not taking shame on that.
I'm not shaming you. I've never apologize. One thing, though, I do want to say is that what's great is that Shelby calls Nate out right away. As soon as he said, I've adjusted to every girl as though that's a positive and a reason to be with someone, she immediately is like, maybe that's the problem. And I wish that he was in a position to receive some of the information she was giving him, but she was like telling it how it is. So I kind of like that she was not afraid to say, that's your main issue and that's why I'm not into you.
Yeah, I agree. This was a strong showing for Shelby. She came across looking pretty good in my eyes. So then we jump to the challenge, which again is kind of just like weirdly transitions to these next events. Like, they always have like a fight and it just jumps to like an event. So the challenge is Lictionary, different type of, you know, sauces and stuff like that. You have to play Pictionary but using your tongue. So what were some of your main takeaways from this challenge?
One thing I wish is that it was automatically determined that the guys would be drawing through. They spin a wheel. It was gross food. It was good food. What, you know, whatever. I think the only gross one was like anchovies. But anyway. And then the guys draw and the girls guess. And I thought it was fine. And it didn't take up too much time. It was fun at certain points. I liked that two people were going at a time. So we got to see some interaction between, you know, we got confessionals of people watching who they were rooting for as opposed to just being engrossed in their own performance. Mm-hmm. I do wish that the guys and girls, the teams, got to pick who would draw and who would guess before they spun.
Yeah.
And like, can you imagine Ellie drawing in this? Like, that would have been amazing. Like, yeah. I just think that they're just doing so many weird gender things, and I'm never the person who's accusing them of weird gender things, but they're doing so many weird gender things, and I just don't understand why. It seems so unnecessary to make the guys always do the challenge.
Yeah, I agree. Leave it. Anytime you can add more decisions in the hands of the contestants is always a good thing in my mind for all these challenges, whether you're picking who does what, you're picking who like sits out or whatever. But I agree. It would have been a nice little fun twist. Now, one of the things that I enjoyed was, I don't know if a lot of people probably caught this unless you listened to our preview podcast, because John's category of instruments was a nice little... this little plug to his secret identity as a cover band artist. And I think Christina, I think she knew that because when they said instruments, she kind of gave him a look like, oh, this is all you. Now, unless you listened to our preview podcast, you would have no idea that John was a cover band artist. So
not only did I listen to our preview podcast twice, but I participated and contributed to this. And I did not make that connection. So good on you. I thought that was a robbery because a piano is the only obvious square instrument. And all he had to do was draw a rectangle and she said piano. So 5 seconds, ding, ding. They're one of the couples moving on. I'm not mad about it, but it was kind of ridiculous.
The only other confusing one to me was, you know, there were pretty specific categories, instruments, sports, whatever. So I think it was Shelby. I think the answer was Eiffel Tower. And one of her guesses was California. Which I'm trying to think of what category could have been that Eiffel Tower and California were both possible answers for. Wouldn't like
geography, but travel?
But like, wouldn't it be like landmarks or something like that would be the category? I don't know.
Did you see what Dario had drawn? First of all, why they got French onion dip? Why was it green? One, two. Dario drew like basically a skewed shape. Like, I think he was drawing the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Yeah, he might not have known what the Eiffel Tower was. There's a decent chance.
But one thing that I thought was interesting, just a few of the pairs. I mean, Jenny and Anthony paired up, and that's the first time Layton's like, I tried to go for Jenny, and she was with Anthony, whatever. That was my impression of him, and it was terrible. But that's okay. I own it. One thing I liked about Jasmine in this episode is Garland gets anchovies, and he's literally throwing up. And Jasmine is like, donut, bagel, ha ha, donut.
At least she was trying to like end it for him early. Like, at least she was.
That sounded like a negative impression. But first of all, her voice is kind of like that. And second of all, I appreciated her commitment to the game. I loved that. I loved that she continues to guess while he's throwing up. I thought that was hysterical.
Shout out to Jasmine.
So thank you, Jasmine. Also, much improved Twitter picture. Her picture's her just like nom in a sandwich. So I was like, okay, I like this girl now. I like her way better than her bio.
Yeah, the Miss Perfect girl, right? That was her.
Which, if you will recall, I couldn't stand her, but you threw a sandwich in your face and you win me over.
There you go.
So who else do I? So Dario and Shelby pair up. This is what I thought was funny. Anthony and Jenny are going. And their category is sex, which I don't know if there's like an underlying theme of Jenny being uncomfortable with being intimate on camera or something. But we had the episode last week where Leighton's like, don't short me. And she gives him like a peck. Mm-hmm. And then when Anthony and Jenny are unfortunately making out, she keeps like running away when she's into it, then she's not. And then they get the sex category and like she can't guess handcuffs. And of course, they cut to Jess, who's like, I know what it is, which I thought was hysterical.
It kind of makes me think maybe Jess and Anthony are perfect matches. Maybe they had a chance at first, they drifted apart, and then in the end, they'll come back together over their love of handcuffs.
I mean, Wes and Kayla were together, then drifted apart, and then came back. I do think there's possibility for that. One thing I don't knock Jenny for not wanting to make out on camera. I don't understand why people want to, but I just do think it's funny that they gave them sex when Jenny is clearly like being portrayed maybe as like a more prude person and Anthony already had sex with someone else.
Yeah, she's definitely not living up to her shot of whiskey in a porcelain teacup moniker. So,
well, at your interpretation of it.
At least my, yeah.
One thing
which
I think,
is the correct interpretation.
Christina is... in the confessional, rooting against Brandon winning because she already knows she's going on the date. She can't be caught. And Brandon and Alex go last. And he has strawberry frosting, so it's almost unfair because that's delicious.
But what if, it's interesting part, what if someone was allergic to strawberries? I assume they wouldn't let them do that, right? They would make them respin. They wouldn't kill people on the show.
I mean... You research that and get back to me. What happens if there's an allergen?
Because I mean, I'm soup. The strawberry allergy is like pretty popular. Decently popular.
of all, first of all, there's no natural part of strawberry icing. None of that. If you're allergic to strawberries, I'm sure you could eat processed strawberry frosting better.
Okay, I'm looking out for these people, okay? These are very important people in my lives. I don't want any of them dropping dead and having the show be canceled.
Leave that to the professionals. Leave that to the Are You The One doctors.
Yeah. Oh, the Are You The One doctors. They're not as good as the Challenge doctors, though.
They're probably the same people. One thing, though, is that with Christina rooting secretly against Brandon, ultimately, although I do want to point out that I was not sure who officially won at the end of this segment and didn't find out until the date started another segment later. But maybe that was just me, just to go off the weird pacing of it. But Christina is playing a perfect game. Like, she is telling all the guys what they want to need to hear personally, individually, not making a big scene, not making her feelings known to the entire house. Now, I mean, she did immediately. She cried, but that's understandable. She's rooting to be alone on this date. When she comes back from the date, she tells Brandon what he needs to hear. Like, this girl is going to walk away with the money and potentially more than one guy in love with her.
Yeah. I mean, she's playing very strong. She had to get a little bit over the hump with the girls in the beginning, but I think since then she's pretty much clicked with almost everyone. So shout out to Christina. She's doing well.
And Brandon's taking all the heat for them still hanging out. Like when they're together, like, Brandon gets accused of not being able to let go, and Christina's like, I'm sorry.
I guess it's easier to get mad at the guy rather than the cute girl, so.
I mean, well, there's the way Shanley handled it, and there's the way, I guess we'll see what happens when one of them gets a confirmed perfect match. So more on that later.
Yep. To be continued.
Hopefully.
So anything else on the challenge?
That's all I got on that. Because okay. Now we open up with Virgin Gate.
Yes, Virgin Gate. Even before, just quick thing before Virgin Gate, we had Anthony preparing for the challenge, which I'd like to say. He was nice working out, getting ready. So shout out to Anthony. He knows what this leads to, so good for him. But yeah, then Virgin Gate.
Brian attributes every single thing that anyone does as to them trying to get on the challenge, which is fair, but I still think it's early for them to make that connection. I don't quite think it's Survivor where, you know, are they playing to come back for All-Stars? Are they playing to win? I think right now, maybe this season is borderline. Last season, they definitely were not playing for All-Stars.
Just give me my challenge moment. This is what I'm here for.
Well, you'll have your real world moment at the end of this podcast.
Yeah. Ashley, Virgin Gate. This is something we talked about the second we were discussing her in the preview podcast. We were waiting for the episode when it was coming out that she was a virgin. We knew that some people would be, oh, this is, I really respect that. I want that in the person that I'm with. And some people would be like, oh, no, I definitely don't want to be with this person. And that's exactly how it played out.
One thing I did love that it was sparked by a purity ring that someone's like, what kind of ring is that? And she's like, it's a purity ring because I'm a virgin.
It's funny that it's mean that it took a week to come up, though.
I mean, who knows the order we're getting? Like, I want to take it as it is. But what I loved is that the clip, the commercial, you know, heard around the world where Ellie's like, you're a virgin.
Oh, that, I mean, we'll get to that. That's one of the great scenes of Are You The One this season, I think. I need, here's my homework assignment for our community. We need that clip. Turn that into various vines of Ellie being told various pieces of information, shocking news, and make clips of that. Kind of like how in Breaking Bad when Hank and Marie watched the fake confession video and people did that. Do that with Ellie being told great pieces of news and her being shocked. Please, RHAP community, do me proud.
I was like, she acts like she was just told, like, that Ashley's actually an alien, that Ashley's actually a man. Like, her reaction is just priceless, and I almost wish we didn't see it in the commercial, that we'd seen it, you know, on the spot, but it was still pretty great.
Oh, don't think, I was, you know, you gotta be really smart with it. You gotta, right when the show, coming up on, you gotta mute it. You gotta mute the TV. Don't let them spoil you mid-episode.
I did a great job of doing that this episode, but come on, you were looking for MTV to air previews for this in the summer, and then when they saw it, you saw that commercial, and this was like one of the first things in every single commercial. So don't tell me you
haven't. I honestly didn't fully remember that. That was in the preview. Her reaction to
Ashley. Oh, I don't know. I just feel like it's been in every single, like, But maybe I'm wrong. All right, I'll give you credit.
You know, you probably, I'm blaming you next week. We'll come back to our corrections department, which we luckily didn't have to get to this episode because I didn't say anything blatantly stupid last week. So moving on up.
I'll also research that and possibly come back next week.
It won't take you very long.
One thing that I think we both skipped over because I hope you feel as I do about Pratt.
Oh, my God.
But Pratt somehow gets another 2 seconds in front of the camera reacting to this and is like, oh, I've dated virgins before. Like, what did he say? Like, I've run over them or I've gotten through them?
I've run through them, I think he said.
I've run through them. And then he says, like, oh, I took a girl's virginity and they didn't leave my apartment for 3 weeks. Like,
oh, I'm so cool. Look at me.
Pratt quickly, by the end of this episode, becomes, I'm going to say it right now, my least favorite MTV personality in the history of me watching this show. And wow. I've been watching it for almost 20 years.
That's a huge statement.
I said it. Try me. I've got my hands like challenging you. Think of I the guy who slapped the girl in the real world. Fine. Like, I will take watching them. And that's the main thing is, like, maybe personally, sure, let's hang out. Maybe it'd be fine. I don't want to hang out, but maybe. if he's on my TV, I like him less on my TV screen than Anthony. Like, I
agree.
Can't stand him on the screen. And I like Paris more than I like him by
a country. Oh, it's not even close. Paris is one of my favorite women in the house.
Okay, I wouldn't go that far. But I did love her reaction where she's like, are you like a preacher's daughter? That I love. Like, that's the only reason that someone would still be a virgin is if they were a preacher's daughter.
Another thing to keep an eye on with Pratt, for some reason, he is always holding a pitcher, but not sharing it with, because he's blatantly drinking it straight from the pitcher and he's not sharing it with anyone. Like, in this scene, he had a pitcher. Later on, when he comforts Nate, he has a pitcher. Like, share the wealth a little bit, Pratt. Like, come on, don't be such a hog.
I am starting to come around on Paris, there's the name, Paris and Pratt potentially being a match because I just don't know who else would like Pratt. Paris, I think, could do fine. I just don't see anyone else having the cockiness to deal with Pratt's fake macho BS. It's all fake. I mean, he was a former nerd. Like, it's all false confidence, but I just can't deal with it. He's got a lot of baggage and I don't know that anyone else is going to want to take it to the curb.
I concur. If he's not matched with Paris, he's not walking away with love at this place. He may find his match, but he won't feel anything for them. Or they won't feel anything for him.
Speaking of people getting locked into relationships here, did you have more on Paris and Brad or for now? Or?
Are we going to the Napocalypse part two or something else?
Well, no, I was just going to, leading into that, I think all of a sudden out of nowhere, and this is another thing where like I did not see, maybe there isn't any more of their relationship than Dario just running these obvious bullshit lines on Shelby and Shelby loving it. But all of a sudden they're just attached to the hip. They're like married now. And all Dario does is just continue to say ridiculous lines. You're a diamond. You're perfect. She could have shit on her face and I'd lick it off. Like, I don't know what's worse. Like, Dario and Nate are more similar, I think, than they are different, just on two opposite emotional ends.
It's feeling like with these people, once they get an inkling that this person may be their perfect match, they just stick to them like glue. Like, they're like afraid to like speak to anyone else because they don't want to doubt themselves. They just want to like, oh, this person may be a match. I'm just going to stick with them and just ride or die with them. Like, it's just like a lot of these people just like, oh, I think one of the main people that I'm really liking that it looks like he's bouncing around is Alex. It seems like Alex is, you know, he's always in the mix of different conversations within different people. He's not just like within one group. So like, but all these other people, like they just find someone and that's it. They're done. They think it's over.
I mean, the one pro for Shelby and Dario doing this is like potentially Shelby's attached to Dario to not want to be left vulnerable to Nathan's like antics, because I mean, it's just so funny because it's like Shelby said one thing, like Shelby originally said to Nate, like, you know, it's too soon to get attached. I want to meet everyone in the house. And like, there's nothing like saying I lied. There's nothing that says I lied to you more than only getting to know one guy in the house.
Seriously. Ugh. It's just really confusing sometimes for these people, but I guess that's why they suck at relationships.
So this is when Nathan really melts down.
Oh my God. I enjoyed every second of it. I love seeing people at their absolute worst on my television screen, because that's what we're watching this for. At least what I'm watching this for, to watch these people hit rock bottom. And Nate hit rock bottom, got a shovel, and then kept on going. It was unbelievable.
I just think that this isn't... I meant to go back to his bio and see what it said, because it said something about, like, being the bad boy, but then, like, coming on too strong, in which case, good job, MTV interns. But I just... This didn't seem like a first time that he's done this. Like, I feel like he falls in love and melts down all the time. But this is when he's saying, like, I want to be the guy you want. We need to work this out. And I want to know what you think about this. So there's kind of a controversial moment where Shelby's up against the wall, not slammed up against the wall, but she's up against the wall. And I mean, I think Shelby could take Nate. Nate's kind of appears scrawny on TV. And Shelby looks like an athletic girl. Like, she's not big. She's just athletic. Mm-hmm. And Nate's arms are outstretched, you know, forming a V between the wall that Shelby is, like, trapped in, a triangle. Was this an aggressive stance? Were you concerned about this at all? What's your take on this?
I never thought it would escalate to violence unless, like, Nate just fully snapped. He was just trying to keep the conversation going as long as possible. I don't think he was ever going to resort to any type of violence. I don't think Dario thought that was going to happen either. I think just Dario just wanted to firmly kind of, like, plant the flag and be like, all right, your time is over. This is where I am now. Go away. I think that's basically all he was trying to do. I don't think he ever thought it was going to escalate to that part. But before you respond to that, actually, while you're talking, I dug up Nate's guest bio. Yeah. So it's really close. It goes, Nate always goes after the hottest girl in the room and usually succeeds. And once he has her, she is pushed away by his immediate attachment. So shout out to MTV interns, because you nailed that one.
To me, it just says now that the bios were written after the episode was filmed, after the shows were filmed.
That's probably the more likely scenario.
But like, realer than real. That's that actually gave the most information probably out of anyone so far. And if the other bios were written after the episodes, then I'm looking forward to seeing what erupts here, because some other people had some crazy shit.
Alexandria, we're looking at you.
Shots fired. The thing is, I didn't ever think that Nathan was going to hit her at all. Like, that's not what I meant by, like, aggressive necessarily, but I just thought the whole thing was uncomfortable. I think that's an uncomfortable... I mean, I've been in that position as a girl, not ever threatened violence, but, like, that happens. Like, someone puts you up against a wall and you can't really get out. I mean, she did try to, like, avoid him a few times. Like, he claims in a deleted scene... He wakes up fresh and he's in this now. He understands what she meant by she needs her space. And he misunderstood Dario coming over there, which what he describes as his misunderstanding is exactly what Dario was doing. But Dario comes over and puts his arm around Shelby, kind of breaks up the whole thing and frees Shelby from it. And he was like, she could have left at any time. Like, that's not true. That's what's not true is I maybe watch it back. I mean, maybe I'll watch it back and change my mind. But my immediate impression was that Shelby could not. Yeah, she could have broken his arm lock and left. But without her putting her hands on him, I don't think she was getting out of that situation. He should not have had both hands surrounding her on the wall. That was not an easy laid back. Oh, we were just talking. That was a trapped situation, and I didn't like it. And I think Nathan was, like you said, he was at rock bottom and he was shoveling his way deeper. Like, he was losing it, and I think if he watched that scene again, he would be upset by what it looks like.
I think if Nate watched any of the past two episodes, I think he'd be upset with what he looked like, and this was just the icing on the cake. Yeah, this was about as poor a display of back-to-back episodes that you're gonna see for someone on an MTV reality show, like, at least the ones that I watch. So, I mean, maybe people have a lot worse stuff in 16 and Pregnant, I don't know, but this was a mess.
It may be for a man, potentially, that didn't involve violence. I don't think that this tops Brooke in whatever Real World season she was on when she just literally snapped. I will tweet out a gif of that, my favorite gif of that. I have a personal favorite. One thing I love is Shelby continues to call it as it is and is like, you're on my nuts or whatever she said.
She's like, get off my nuts.
Like, you're always on my nuts. Like, it was just, that's what it is. Like, truer words were never have ever been said. And like, that's true. Get off her nuts, man. She's not into it. That's finally Shelby said what needed to be said. It may have fallen on deaf ears, but
we heard it. We heard it. This was a great, great showing for Shelby. She was in a really, really difficult spot with all this. And I thought she handled it as well as you're going to see on a TV show like this. So
What I did like is that his insanity made it a lot easier for her to get rid of him and move to Dario. Like, if he were smart and strategic, and we'll get to what Layton thinks about this later, because I agree with Layton, but I don't agree with his misogyny. But anyway, I think Nate made it easy for her to walk away when, if he really liked her, he should have played it cool and then would have maintained this relationship. He totally got in his own way. And I mean, people do that, but it was really embarrassing for him. One thing that was a little embarrassing for Shelby is why I'm not saying she had a pretty good day, but not a perfect day. Like Christina is, she goes to Jenny and is like, he being Dario was so attracted to me that he tried to protect me.
I think she even went even further than that. She said, that was one of the coolest things anyone has ever done for me.
Which I can understand the rescue. Like, she was uncomfortable.
Ever, though? Ever?
I mean, she was... Okay, maybe that was a little bit of an exaggeration, sure. But she was in an uncomfortable situation. This guy who is crazy and into her and saying crazy things after no more than 2 weeks. Let's be generous. No more than 2 weeks.
I think you're right. I think it's been a week.
So, but let's just even no more than 2 weeks, but a week to 2 weeks. And she feels kind of restrained and kind of trapped and on camera in front of America and, well, internationally in front of the world and or the world who watches this. And Dario comes in, breaks it up and frees her from it. So I can understand her immediate reaction being like, that's one of the nicest things someone's done for me. But to say that he was motivated by his attraction to her is a little wonky for me.
Yeah, I can understand that. I get that.
Not he's such a great guy, not he likes me so much, we have such a strong connection. Like, he's so attracted to me that he just tried to protect me. Okay.
Whatever logic you need, yeah. So then again, it just weirdly jumps to the date. Like, Nate's, like, on the floor in the fetal position, and then we cut to them on the beach. Just kidding. Like, MTV's gotta work on these transitions. I was expecting to come back to, like, them, like, talking down Nate to, like, stay in the house. Nope. Date time.
This is when I first realized who won, which is Ashley and Layton are on the date. Brandon and Alex are on the date, and John Moosty. I'm bringing Moosty back because one of our listeners tweeted at me that she likes the name Moosty. So I'm, you know, one all for one for all. I'm going with the one voice of the listener and calling him Moosty. Moosty and Christina are on a date. So what do you make of this?
You know. I kind of liked John and Christina together, but Christina is like the type of person that, again, I think I mentioned this about like last week, that you're always going to give these people a chance if you think they could be a match because you don't want to just shun them away. So Christina's just like has this personality that, you know, whoever she's with, it just seems like it's going to work. And I think the way it would be, even if she was like with Anthony or even with Pratt, like I think if she was just with this person, it just weirdly seems like they would click because that's just like the type of personality that she has. So seeing John and Christina click didn't surprise me at all.
If I remember correctly, Christina's at the older end of this age spectrum. I think she's like 24 or 25. I think Brandon is too. But I think Christina shows her maturity here, and not in a way that like she's old, but just in a way that she's open and she knows better than to just like lock into one person potentially. And like where some people are even discounting people like Alex, I mean, we'll get to her, but Alex right away is saying on their date, we're definitely not a match. We're only friends. Here are the pros and cons of us being a match rather than just getting to know him and enjoying yourself. And even if this is what I don't understand, it's like the guys talk, the girls talk. If you have a date that you're not gelling on, you still want that person to like you because when people are talking about you in the house, you don't want the guys to get flooded like, oh, she's terrible. Like Tyler. Oh, she's so annoying. So I don't know why Alex is already like beating down Brandon, but maybe that's just something we didn't get to see.
And even, I mean, last year, some of the pairs ended up kind of just being more friends, it seemed like, than any type of romantic situation. So, I mean, maybe they paired you together because they thought there'd be a romantic spark, but it turns out you're just maybe just be friends or whatever. So, I mean, it turns out they obviously weren't a match later on, but you can't be shooting it down that quickly just from like a one bullet pro con list.
Yeah, that really bothered me. Also, this is where like I kind of started to internally be defending Brandon. I know.
It's unbelievable. We could just like take a snippet of that and go back in time to the preview podcast.
I think it's a result of how he's getting portrayed in this episode and how everyone else is reacting to him. Like, I think he's doing a pretty okay job at letting Christina do her thing and still trying to do his thing. I mean, when given the opportunity, he says, you know, this is a girl I love, or I'm never going to stop caring about her. But he's not going full Christine Shanley. He's not closed completely. Like he said, I've been trying and I just haven't sparked with anyone. You know, he's not completely 100% every second word out of his mouth is I'm not with anyone else but Christina. And he's not interrupting John and Christina on the date. He's not trying to hang out with Christina the whole time. He's spending time with Alex. So I just don't really understand why everybody's coming down on him, why Alex is automatically like, we're not a match. I just think, were we missing something? Were we not shown like him totally, totally freaking out? I think it was understandable.
Yeah, I don't think on the day he did anything too astronomical. I mean, we'll get to what they tried to do later on that had people freaking out. But on the date, he seemed fine. I think everyone seemed to be separated into their various pairs. So on the date, I don't think anyone, if they were watching it back, could have said anything that bad about what Brandon did there.
Now, if you don't mind, when we talk about Moose and Christina, I'm going to move also right into the voting ceremony because what's that called? Just when they vote you into the truth booth? Truth booth?
I don't know. I just think of it like the deliberation, maybe. I don't know.
Perfect. Let's use it. Borrow a word from the challenge. So Moosty and Christina are being really playful. They're having a good time. Like you said, like they seem to be getting along well, but that may just be a result of Christina being really cool and chill. And John pulls this, I want to kiss you, but I feel bad because Brandon's here, which I don't think is that bad at the time. I don't quite think it's, I mean, for any Bachelor Pad viewers, there's a famous guy who always asks, like, can I kiss you? Marcel, it was really weird. Markel, I just called him Marcel the show. Anyway, I thought that was more respectful. I know what you have with Brandon. He's right here. Mm-hmm. And then Christina goes in for the kiss and they're happy. Mm-hmm. Until John blows up their spot in front of everyone at deliberation, says, oh, we were making out. And it's like, you coward. You weren't willing to just make a move like Dario in front. Not that I thought that was the best, but you weren't just ready to assert yourself. You were on a date with her and make a move. And now you're acting tough in front of everyone and bragging about it when you didn't even make the move in the first place. Everyone was like, he has such balls. I don't think so. I think that was garbage and hurtful and just stupid.
It was a bizarre thing. Because he starts his thing off, you know, I didn't want to shove it in his face and be making out with Christina right in front of him, but instead I'm going to shove it in his face and tell him that we made out right in front of him. It was like either go all the way and be like the gentleman side of it or go the opposite way and just say, forget Brandon, you guys are not a match. I like you. I'm going for it. So he tried to like do both. He tried to be like the gentleman in private and like the badass in public, and he probably should have reversed the two if he really wanted to be like to be real. So he just, it was, I wasn't as down on him as you are. I don't think I'm still, I don't mind Moosey as much as this episode, but it definitely wasn't his finest moment.
Yeah, I just think he was trying to either compete with Brandon, what he did at the last deliberation or two deliberations ago, and kiss her in front of everyone, and what Dario did and kiss her in front of everyone by like bragging about it. But I just think it went to show how much he maybe doesn't get Christina, because I feel like Christina probably isn't into that sort of thing. Like just the way that she's keeping all of her ducks in a row, that she's keeping all of her drama together, that she doesn't need him outing her to Brandon and giving her a mess to clean up.
No, yeah. And I mean, Brandon even drops like the L-bomb right after that, saying like, I love this girl. So.
And Christina looks pleased. Like, Christine's face is not like Shelby when Nate would say something like that, but.
No, she loves it.
All right.
As it's obvious from them almost going to the private room and having some fun private time.
Anyway, we'll get to that and you'll say boom, 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 and you'll like it. No, but this is what I don't understand is everyone is, so Alex and Brandon get voted in after his trifecta run in the truth booth. I almost said the boom, boom room. Why does everyone think they're going to be a match? Like, on what basis should I expect Alex and Brandon to be a match?
The thing is, I didn't expect any of these matches to be a match. And I mentioned it in the open about the challenge. Like, I think what these people don't, they kind of just like forget the fact that the only people they can send into the truth booth are the people that win the challenge. So going in to each challenge, you need to have a group that you think this couple or this couple needs to go in. And one of those two have to win. So next week, if Pratt or Paris or Bree and Curtis are not in the truth booth, then these people just have absolutely no idea what they're doing. Because I don't care what the challenge is, let one of them win. Put your pride aside. You don't need to go on some jet skiing date. You need to put them in. So just they have to remember. They can't just like compete and just throw anyone in. Like, only select people can be thrown into the truth booth. And I think they just forget that every time.
I definitely agree. I don't think that they're making, I'm always surprised that every challenge isn't thrown for the exact person they want in the truth booth every week. I do think that this week's challenge would have been more difficult to throw just based on you having to get the word. Usually it's something like one person can just intentionally screw up or take longer.
Yeah, I agree. This was a tougher one to manipulate.
But regardless, I totally agree with you, and they're definitely not using all of their opportunities to their advantage. But so no shock, not a match, and everyone's surprised. And who's his match then? If it's not these three, who's it? Stop sending him in with randos.
Does Brandon go into a truth booth again this season?
There could be logic behind it in terms of, well, we've already ruled three people out, so we have an increased odds of, like, if you send somebody into a truth booth who's already been, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the odds are better that there'll be a match because you already have ruled out other people.
Right.
I think it would be absolutely boring and ridiculous. I mean, at this point, you're just going to, what are you going to do? You're going to put him in 10 times until your last truth booth and you'll secure his match?
Do you think any other two are matches?
Ashley and Layton would be like a total dark horse. I mean, sure, maybe, but I just don't think that all we've been seeing of Layton and how little we've been seeing of Ashley means that they would be a match, but who knows with this season. And then, I mean, like you said, John and Christina, I just don't think need to be a match. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't, I think that they're two kind of benign people. I don't necessarily think that they would get matched based on what little I know about them. And I think that they could easily be matched with a couple other people in the house. So logically, I don't think that they would be a match, but again, it's possible. Maybe I would have sent one of those two couples in, though, before I would have sent in Brandon again with Alex randomly.
Yeah, I agree. I think this was just a waste of I don't think anything. I think it was just a waste of a total waste of a challenge win, total waste of a truth booth. So I think it was just a waste. And then we get the male chicken block.
Well, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. I just thought this was like totally embarrassing to Moosty when Christina goes and tells him, oh, I only kissed him because I didn't want to reject him. And Christina like finally cracks and, you know, starts playing games again with Brandon, which I support completely.
And then they go to the private room. And
nobody wants to hear you say private room. Nobody wants to hear you say private room. If I were a listener, I would have turned this off.
Oh, you've lasted this far. That's good. I appreciated that. So they go to the boom boom room, but Moosey's not having any of it. This is not happening on his watch. On his watch, this is not happening. Now, at least he didn't go and kick her in the face. So, you know, he's taking a step up, but he completely opens the door, blows it up, says, what's going on in here? And that's all she wrote.
No, what he says is, why is it so hot in here? And then he says something else that's pretty funny. But I love how Christina goes to him later and is like, are you mad at me? And is totally playing the guys against each other. It's brilliant, and I love it. I don't think this was a good move for Moosty.
Yeah, I can't see anyone. I mean, even if like you want them to stay apart from each other, just like give them that moment, and like you can tell them later on, like just back off a little bit, dude.
I do think that he got lucky. I think that Christina kind of appreciated it because she was like, oh, he's right. I shouldn't be in there with him, like whatever. But I do think that it could have, the risk was not worth the possible reward. Like that actually breaking them up, she could have been super embarrassed by it. She could have been upset at him. Like, I just don't think that it was a good move. Plus now he's made an enemy in Brandon.
Yeah. And it's not going to end well. Not going to end well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I know nothing. I was gonna ask you for anything else before we touched the Lenny, Jenny, Anthony thing.
Lenny.
Layton. Oh, my God.
No, let's move right into Lenny.
Yeah, they added a 22nd cast member, the 11th guy, Lenny. No, all right, so what were you gonna say?
No, I was gonna talk about Layton because basically Jenny and Anthony are kind of lurking over the balcony, and to me it's unclear if Layton knows they're there or not, because I don't think
he does.
I didn't think so either, but after watching a deleted scene of how he talks to Jess, like, I don't think he would hesitate to say any of this in front of anyone.
Yeah, it's possible. It just didn't seem like he was talking pretty loudly. Like, it seemed like that was like the main common area. I don't know like the layout of the house, but it seemed like that's like the main area. So if you're going to be talking that loudly and openly in that type of area, you can't be upset if just someone else can hear you. It wasn't like they were like putting their ear up against the wall listening in. Like, they were just like standing openly on the balcony, probably getting lit. So
what Layton's basically saying is, and he says, like, he's basically saying that everyone needs to keep doing their game like they would outside of the house, and not just totally, and this is how I'm interpreting it. This is how I'm interpreting, because he's basically saying like everyone's getting crazy and acting ways they wouldn't act inside the house, outside of the house, and everyone needs to lay back and give girls space because girls like you more when you don't pay attention to him, and that you when you don't pay attention to them. And this is all the nice way of saying it compared to how he says, which is, if you don't pay attention to them, the bee you like is going to come running to you. Yeah. What did you make of this?
He was definitely, I'll put it this way. I think he was definitely plastered. I don't think he realized how loud he was talking and in what area he was talking. So I think this was more like his own private thoughts. And I don't think he realized kind of just where he was at that moment when he was saying all this. But it's probably not that far off the truth. Just you got to try to maybe touch up the way you phrase certain things. But I mean, all it really did though was push Jenny to Anthony.
No, definitely the way he said it was completely wrong. The location he said it was completely wrong. But someone needs to tell these guys to stop falling in. Like, would you go on a date with somebody, even if you saw them every single day, and then tell them you love them within the first week? No one does that in real life. And if, I mean, some people do, but they don't, you know, necessarily find their perfect match.
And then you end up on this show because you suck at relationships.
And then you do it all again.
Yeah.
So I don't think that, I think Layton looked kind of like a big oaf this episode, but I think what he's saying has merit, but his misogynistic attitude is not making a fan of his out of Jenny.
No. So, and then it pushed Jenny to make out a couple times with Anthony. And did you, again, this is like some weird things I noticed, but one of the times they were hooking up, for some reason Anthony's hands were just like so clearly down his pants, like his own pants. It was just very like, I didn't know what was happening.
I was looking away most of the time when they were on the screen, but someone from the cast, I don't know if it's Curtis or who it was, tweeted like, that's a huge, major hands down your pants there.
I'm not the only one who saw it. I was like, what is going on?
I don't know what's going on with them, and honestly, it disgusts me.
So, anything else before we jump to the matchup ceremony?
Well, we have another Nathan moment just to totally beat this to death. Nathan is talking to Tyler and says, which is maybe like the first guy we've seen talking to Tyler by choice. And Nathan says, like, I hate her more than life right now. And then shuns like the idea and renounces the idea of finding love in this house and is only trying to build friendships. And then Tyler tries to say, like, oh, well, that's frustrating for me. This is a game about relationships and everything I'm feeling right now is friendships. And Nathan says, stop letting this get to you. I know you're going to finish on top. And it's like, what? I don't understand these constant motivational lines. Like, Alex, go, Brandon, you can do it. Nathan, like, you'll finish on top. Like, do they not realize what show they're on?
I don't think they've realized exactly where they are at different points in time, so.
I don't know where I am when I'm watching this at different points in time, so that's fine.
All right. Whew. And then we go. We got the matchup ceremony. And just leading into that, Andrew Kirk asks, until we see Pratt and Paris or Brianna and Curtis go into the truth booth, is there any chance we see them pick different matches? No. So that's why I think next week they have to, one of them has to go in.
This is where, so Jasmine makes what I thought was an outrageous claim. In a confessional leading up to the truth booth, saying like the strategy hasn't worked the first two times, so now they're going to follow their hearts. And I tweeted like there was strategy the first two times, and she tweeted back that there was until Paris ruined it, which we talked about. But then she told us to watch a deleted scene, which is actually a pretty interesting. I don't like deleted scenes because I kind of feel like you have your 1 hour to tell me the story that's important and anything. Like, I don't like live feeds for Big Brother. Like, I just don't like the idea that some people are working with more information than others. And if it was that important, I'd watch it on my TV and not my computer.
Right.
But this scene, did you get a chance to watch this between Brianna and Pratt?
I only watched the two deleted scenes from this week with Garland rapping and Ellie getting fucking lit on the balcony.
All right. So there was a scene where there are actually two pretty interesting scenes, but the more important one is that Brianna and Pratt and Paris are having a conversation about their potential strategy from last week where they switch both matches, you know, not matches, but they switch Pratt and Paris and Brianna and Curtis and leave everyone else the same. And Brianna and Paris, Paris and Pratt are against it for some reason that's unbeknownst to me. And it seemed like Brianna. Pratt starts going off about how they're never going to change their match. The point of the show is to date people you like, try getting to know people you like, go on dates with people you like, whatever, and get matched with who you like, and we'll just figure it out. Like, he's explaining to them the point of the show when he completely went around the point of the show the first episode. It was just so frustrating, and Brianna is trying to explain to him why it makes sense, and then they just blow up. This is when I really decided that I hated Pratt, because literally, if what makes no sense to me is if they'd gone with that plan and got zero matches, which would then have confirmed that Pratt and Paris
there
and Brianna and Curtis were matches, then they never would have seen the truth booth and Pratt and Paris would have gotten exactly what they wanted, which is being on the show the entire time.
Yeah. It made zero logical sense why they didn't follow through with that plan, and it just adds another notch in the Pratt is awful belt. So,
but you can see that Pratt and Paris adamantly refuse to use any strategy that involves the two of them not picking each other for no reason. Like, he goes off on how we're going to pick each other for every date, whatever. That's not what's on the table here. Picking someone for your matchup ceremony literally means nothing.
It means where you sit. That's all it means. Like, they were not going to get the 10 perfect matches at that moment, Pratt. Like, realize that. It was literally impossible for you to get all 10. And that, like, all they were trying to do was confirm it for you guys.
If they didn't get all 10, I mean, if they did get all 10, then great. And you can go spend your life with Paris outside of the house and have your money too and not have to deal with the drama of anything else. It just, he was making no arguments. He was just saying, we're not doing it. And it was so frustrating. I'm sorry. Okay. I hate Pratt. But they did try. I will restate what I said. They did try. Paris and Pratt seem to be the two that are not letting them use any strategy.
So,
There you go.
All right.
Watch that scene. It's pretty interesting.
All right. I'll check it out. I'm going to run through all the matchups, and then we'll go back and discuss the main ones. So the first one starts off with John picking Christina, then Curtis obviously picking Bree, Nate picking Jessica, Brandon picking Shelby, Pratt and Paris, Garland picking Alexandra, Dario picking Ashley, Alex picking Jasmine, Anthony picking Jelly. Oh my God. Jenny. I cannot say her name correctly. I don't know. It's not that hard of a name to pronounce. Oh my God. And then Layton being stuck with Norm, Ellie, and Tyler, and choosing Ellie. Tyler being left out once again.
One thing I want to say is I didn't even realize I wasn't writing down the matches until Nathan picked Jessica. And then at the end, I didn't have three of the matches written down. And it was Paris and Pratt, Brianna and Curtis, and John and Christina. So unsurprising that I was bored by those picks.
There were a few standout moments. The first was Nate picking Jessica, which made absolutely no sense. And I love when Jessica was asked about her dynamic with Layton and just like looked like right at Jenny and was like, what about it? What about it? Fighting words.
Well, what I loved is that Nathan's like, I think Shelby's nervous to see if we're not a match. Nothing could be more delusional. Like, she's not nervous about finding a match. She wants to find a match. She's confident that she doesn't want to spend any more time with you. But I did think that he found a little slice of redemption by not picking her when he could have at the matchup ceremony.
I agree. He started to climb up. At least he put down the shovel. He stopped digging.
I think he's still now going to go into a waiting mode, and that can only last so long. But Jess wants and needs someone else. She's got her eye on Layton. Ugh.
And then, of course, we had the fun little conversation between Brandon and Moosty.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I thought was revealing about this is that Brandon says, if you have to ask to kiss a girl, like, you shouldn't have kissed, whatever. But he calls out that he asked to kiss her, which exposes that Christina told Brandon everything about their kiss.
Right.
And I guess guys just don't pick up on this because she escapes that scot-free. But I think, like, for a girl, it would have been like, you know how John Jacobs calls out the roast and reveals that Scally told John Jacobs about an intimate moment between her and him and JC? It's like that kind of thing. Like, if he has the information, then your girl is more loyal to that guy.
100% agree. If that was reversed, it would have been girls being catty to each other, but instead it's Christina.
Extensions
just
would have been flying.
Christina just smiling, giving a little thumbs up, and squirreling along. I don't think that's a word, but I liked it for the context.
So what do you make of Brandon picking Shelby?
I think he has absolutely no idea who his match is, and just said, I don't know why he took it from I think him and Dario are pretty close, so I don't know what that was about, that he wouldn't let Dario pick Shelby. That was kind of weird. And it also just goes back to, I don't get why these people don't talk beforehand about, yo, so I'm picking this person to be my match, I'm picking this person to be my match, and they're like, oh, okay, I won't pick them. Like, it just feels like there's just zero communication.
Part of me, like, wants to believe that there was some sort of, like, well, let's see how many matches we have if we separate these people, but there was none of that.
There's none of that. They're just, they're just like, I think it almost all of that, but just like when they get up there, Ryan says, who's your perfect match? They're like, ooh, who should I pick? And that's literally when they decide. These people.
This did actually free up and make room for your pick, Ashley and Dario, your preseason potential match.
That was one of my preseason matches?
I believe so.
You're probably right. I have no idea. It's possible.
I think so. I'll go back to the tapes, but
we'll review it.
I think he did, and I agreed because I think their pictures looked very compatible. But who knows? Maybe that's one of the three beams.
Could be. So three beams. I mean, do we think that the two main are matches at this point? Like,
well, I don't think Alex and Jasmine have a prayer. I can't believe we saw them.
That was bizarre. I can't believe. And he just like fully picked her. Like, he could have chose Jessica. I cannot say Jenny's name without mispronouncing. I don't know what is going on. He could have picked Jenny, Ellie, or Tyler. But
I mean, and they said it as though it was planned. Like, it wasn't like, oh, you know, we had a decent connection and there's no one left that I think I connect with. It was like, we decided that opposites attract. And so one thing that I thought was weird about it is they're like, maybe they put us together because opposites attract. If you're not finding yourself attracted, then you shouldn't force the issue because you think they may have put you together.
Yeah. I think there's some of these, they're just like, some of them are overthinking what MTV is doing rather than just like doing what they think. They're trying to like overthink the process, and that's not going to end well.
Definitely agree. So yeah, who do you think are the three beams?
I do think Curtis and Bree are a match. I just can't see them not being a match at this point. I think maybe Layton and Ellie could be a match. That could be something that comes out of nowhere. And then screw it, Dario and Ashley. If I said it in the preseason, somehow they get matched up with three beams, I'm sticking with it.
I think it's possible that Anthony and Jenny are a match. Jenny are a match. I back potentially thinking that Pratt and Paris are a match, and I agree with you. I think Brianna and Curtis are a match, if only because we haven't seen any drama with them or them interacting with anyone else, even in a friendly way. Like, we haven't seen them doing anything except picking each other and trying to help the group pick strategy. So I just kind of think one day they're going to quietly go into the truth booth, be a match, and jet off to their private honeymoon suite. One thing, though, that you did get your wish this episode is that there was that one girl on the side complaining and working against the whole team, saying that three beams doesn't mean anything.
And Tyler, my God, she's just like just not involved in anything, like challenges, matchup ceremony. I mean, has she been picked for anything?
Not.
When there's an opportunity for her to be left out. I think she's being left out of everything, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I love how she's like rooting against them, saying that like she may not be Christina. I think she very well could be Christina's match. You know, they're both, I don't know, girls. They could both be.
We don't get that kind of analysis anywhere else.
But takes one to know one. But she doesn't know that she isn't. So I don't know why she's rooting against the team. Like, it doesn't mean anything. They still don't know who those three matches are. Like, you're a part of this. I know they're excluding you, but you are contractually a part of this.
And she somehow, this was, I think I tweeted this yesterday, but it was one of the more stunning moments when she actually used the word correlate properly in a sentence. I was like, whoa, maybe she actually is like pretty smart. Maybe she can
she
get
goes to a good college.
Yeah, maybe she can get Guise off and running after this.
All right, so do we go after match or do we go questions? I can't end on the after.
I watched some of the after match. Was there anything even worth bringing it up?
I actually surprisingly thought this was one of the better ones in that it was only really awful and not unwatchable.
There was ever a backhanded compliment.
Ellie said the F word, so we know that it's live. So if you didn't correct it last week,
so you had to reconfirm the fact that I was blatantly wrong. All right, good.
Let's see. Simone thinks that people from Portugal are called Portugal, that she loves her Portugal fans. Portugal is an adjective.
There we go.
One thing I thought was interesting, and this is like scraping the bottom of the barrel here, but Ellie reveals herself to be Team Nate, which I can't believe I'm saying this, but I really do trust Ellie's judgment. So that made me rethink how I feel about him a little bit.
Nate's, Ellie's a savant.
There was one other thing. Nope, I lied. There was nothing else. The only other thing that, you might learn from is that Ellie does an impression of her own voice, which is just her own voice. Like Simone does a Southern accent like Ellie and in a video, and Ellie's like, I don't sound like that. You're making me sound like this. And it's exactly her voice, and it's pretty hysterical. Other than that, the aftermatch is absolutely worthless.
Okay, let's move on to... We got a couple questions we can get to, so... Gina Marie Palmieri Marsic. It was a pretty long question, so I'll just do a quick summary. It's basically saying, these people suck. Will the producers step in and help them along the way? That's basically what she asked. Now, again, last year, they were probably along close to the same pace of doing ends. I think it was episode 5 or 6. They gave them a double truth booth. I think they at one point allowed them to pick any pair from the challenge to go in. So I think you know, if they're still really struggling, my guess is they'll do something similar probably around in a couple weeks. They'll give them two truth boots in an episode, and then they'll start forgetting whoever wins the date, and they'll let them pick whichever pair they want to go in.
Well, you've changed your, because we've talked about this before, and you said that you don't think they want, they're going to help them because they don't want them to win.
I think they will help them some, but I think even though they have three beams, I think they're, I just get this feeling that they're just like much further away than the season one people, because it seems like even the beams they have are just so uncertain, especially if both Pratt and Curtis, those two pairs aren't a match, I don't see them getting there. I think they will help them just from a pure consistency aspect from what they did last year or this year, but I don't think they'll doubly help them to make sure they get there. Because I don't think they want them to win. I think they want to have a season where they win and a season where they don't. So going forward, you know that there's a chance of either one happening.
I just think that you're being too harsh on where they are right now. And I just, my impression from last season, and maybe this was an effect of you watching it like five episodes in a row and me watching it week by week last season, but my impression was that they were just as lost last season, and then all of a sudden it started coming together. Maybe. Like, I'm going back because, let's see.
But I mean, again, also this season they do have the extra girl, which makes it harder. I don't know. Harder.
It makes it harder, but more difficult. But yeah. I don't necessarily think it makes it so much more difficult in the first few weeks. I think that will prevent it from being eight matches and then we just switch. But like, Ethan and Amber were one of the early matches. Joey and Brittany were one of the beams of light, and then they never matched again until the last episode. They weren't aware of that. Khaleesi and Dylan were their first, you know, their first match.
Yeah.
Chris T and Paige on their best week was week two. It was Adam and Shanley who didn't figure themselves out for a while. Chris T and Paige who didn't figure it out until week five. Joey and Brittany who didn't figure it out until week 10, 9. And then Ethan and Amber, who were on and off. So I just don't think that they really had a handle on it. And then most of their matches the first 3 weeks were different each time.
That's fair.
So I have a little more faith in them.
All right.
I will say you're
glass half full.
That based on this chart from season one, the first episode was 14 days in the house. The second episode, matchup ceremony, is 21 days in the house. So it may actually be a full week, which would mean by these count, it was 3 or 4 weeks before Nate freaked out. But
You think it's been 3 weeks? I don't think so. I need to get confirmation from some of these people.
We'll reach out.
We'll do some digging.
All right. So let's see. What other questions we got?
The only other question, Ana Jose asked, what will happen first? Brandon finds his match or Tyler gets picked to participate in something? And shout out to Brandon for commenting on it. He was quite amused by that comment.
If you want to interact with the cast, join us on Facebook.
The Facebook thread on Rob as a Podcast is the place to go to interact with your favorite castmates or just Brandon.
Are you not interested in the rest of the questions we got?
Or I mean, I think we kind of touched on them, pretty much the rest of them. You know, we touched on the going with your heart or strategy question. We did, of course, Plan BC's question.
I think what Alex Panda Moran is asking is, do you think that they're purposely not going with strategy because they want to be on TV? She says, because they know if they do figure out all the perfect matches sooner, it means they get less TV time.
There's no way they're going to, you could put 10 like people, like 20 people actually know each other. I don't think you're going to figure out the 10 perfect matches that quickly. It's just not going to happen. Like, you can try to do that, but if anything, that just means you're just not going to get it in the end. Like, it's not as easy as some people might think to pair 10 people, 10 strangers together.
Like, one interesting question we got from the comments on our last podcast from Style Z, who asks, could it be beneficial for the house to let Brandon and Christina continue to pursue each other? The basis for this would be completely eliminating the 11th girl from the mix, get 9 matches, then whichever girl is left out at that point is matched with Brandon, because we know he doesn't have 2 matches.
That's an interesting thought. I'm not shooting it down completely. It's an interesting idea.
I think the girls should maybe be thinking that, considering some of the girls didn't even want to send her into the truth booth. They shouldn't want to encourage her to get away from Brandon, who they know isn't her match.
Yeah. I semi buy that.
And then I got a question from Michael Cohen, who is actually someone I work with. So bringing this to work with me, who says, is there anyone on the season you not only expect to see on the challenge, but anyone you think will become a staple, i.e. Johnny Bananas? So is there anyone you see getting on the challenge and becoming, even you could do season one or two, that you think would be a staple and a good character?
This season, I think Anthony will be on. If he's basically the Adam of this season and Adam's on the challenge, I think Anthony will make the leap. But this season, I don't think there are as many strong contenders. It seems like a kind of a weak crop of people. I don't know. I think the season one cast, I think if Scally ever got on, he'd be big. But I don't see any of future all-stars in this season. I'm not gonna lie.
I think Christina would be good. I think there are some maybe good female contestants.
Yeah, I think Shelby would even
be good.
I think the female crop is stronger than the male crop for the challenge this time around.
One question is, how many seasons of Are You the One have to happen before there can be an Are You the One versus the Real World? Because I think that, like, Are You the One sets up, like, many relationships for rivals and exes, but you're only going to be, like, two couples, and then you're not going to be able to make a name for yourself. Like, when am I going to see a full cast of Real World versus Are You the One?
Give it 5 seasons. I think 5 seasons.
You'll have, okay,
5 seasons.
There you go.
That'll be 100 people to choose from. I think you'll be able to form a strong group. Strong group of, like, 12 or 13. To go head to head with Johnny Bananas when he's like 50. I think that sounds like a good number.
Any Twitter drama this week from your end?
I did not see any Twitter drama.
The only thing is, and look, I still like Leighton. I'm hanging on for another week. I liked him last week. I called him one of my favorites. He tweeted another, just like his views on women. I don't want to make a generalization, but he tweets, Leighton Jones MTV at Leighton Jones MTV tweets, women want a man, not a girl, or they would just be a lesbian. So he really understands, you know, gender theory and sexuality. And then he comes at us because, well, I came at him. He tweeted, this is a little Twitter drama that I'm going to blow up, that one of our listeners backed me up on. I don't know if you saw this. You were involved in it. But he tweeted something that I tried to find the tweet. I don't know if he had deleted it or if I just didn't look hard enough, but he tweeted something that literally made no sense. Somebody replied, huh? And I wanted to reply something to it because it made no sense. And instead I just tweeted at Brian and said, new game for tomorrow's wrap up. Bus driver's route will have to decipher at Leighton Jones MTV's tweets. Hashtag Are You the One. And he responded, don't let autocorrect happen around some people because some people have nothing better to do. And then he puts like a little winky emoticon as though that's going to make it better. And I just put exactly because I don't feel like arguing with him. And Haley, oh, I didn't copy her handle. I think it's like at Haley underscore strong or at H strong underscore something like that. To Haley Strong, who's a host of a podcast in the Wrap Up Network. Sorry, Siri's trying to talk to me. She says, hashtag throwing shade, hashtag obviously not a listener. We have better things to do, but we choose to do this.
We do.
So don't hurt my feelings, Leighton Nuns.
Yeah, Leighton, come on. It's all in good fun. It's all in good fun. You know, most of it.
Yeah, so that's all I got is my own little minor drums that I hope to continue to foster.
I think that's all I got for this wrap-up. Do you want to touch on the Real World stuff, or should we just kind of... That's not really Are You the One related, right?
Quick summary is that this next theme is going to suck.
I don't know if you haven't seen it, but new season is called Real World Skeletons. It's as bad as it sounds. All different type of people are going to come into the house, you know, cyberbullying, like all long lost brothers, all this whacked out stuff. Just Google if you want to learn more about it before. The premiere is December 16th, so you got a couple months to get acquainted to the new Real group. But that's a story for another day.
Andy Dennard on Reality Blurred has a pretty good summary of it, and he doesn't pull punches with his opinion on the Real World. So check that out if you want. We'll definitely do a preview podcast where we'll get into our opinions on this theme,
which I'm sure will be a plenty. But that is for another day. Right now, we're still focused on Are You the One? And we'll be coming back each and every week. We're 3 episodes in, but no stopping now. So if you want to shoot us questions that we can incorporate throughout the podcast, put it at the Facebook page. Rob is a podcast Facebook page. Or you can tweet us, for me, at BusDriversRoute.
And me at @LashTweets.
Or you can comment on the actual post that we'll put at RobHasAWebsite.com. And I know there were some issues with the podcast last week about just being on one feed. So it'll always be on RobHasAWebsite.com/ChallengeiTunes. So just subscribe to that and don't worry about anything else and you'll always get it there. So if you want a hashtag for this week, we'll give you a little behind-the-scenes action. This is actually take 3 of this podcast. We had a little technical problems the first 2 times that...
We had technical problems?
I had some technical problems the first couple of times. So if you want a hashtag, hashtag take 3 will be the hashtag for this episode. And it's appropriate for episode 3, so take 3. Hopefully, if we're on take 4 for next week...
You better not do that on purpose. No. It won't be cute the 4th time.
It wasn't cute the 3rd time tonight. So I think that'll do it for us. Until next time, have a good one, guys.